You ready? Hey, Saints and our beloved Ains.
What up with y'all? How y'all doing?
That was real happy, wasn't it?
Yeah, you sounded real happy.
Cheerful.
Right.
I think it's because, you know, usually on this podcast, I just have the privilege of talking to you.
Yeah.
It just be me and you the whole time.
Is it a privilege?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, because I have a husband that I actually care about what he has to say.
Oh.
But at the same time,
my heart feel warm.
Sometimes I do want to involve other people.
Other people named Preston.
Sure, like Preston Sprinkle. So if you're new to the name Preston Sprinkle, Preston is like one of my faves when it comes to the subject of all things New Testament, but also sexuality. He has a book called Embodied. He has some other books. Sorry, I don't remember him, Preston, but you know I love you. He has a podcast called Theology in the Raw, where he talks to complementarians and egalitarians and trans folk and just everybody about everything. He talks to woke people and non-woke people. It's like a conversation. But the thing that I appreciate about Preston is that he engages in conversations that are polarizing, that are complicated, that are nuanced, but he has a gentleness and an integrity about it that I think the church really needs to learn.
Yeah, that's what I'll say about you. Of course, I was introduced to your podcast by Jackie. I mean, I was riding in the car with her one day, and a person kept calling you Preston. I'm like, who is this guy named Preston that she's listening to? So as I begin to listen to your podcast more, I've always respected how you had just a plethora of different like people on your podcast, and it was different ideas, but you never really seemed biased towards one view. You always seemed very fair, but also represented truth. And so I've always appreciated that about you from afar. So it's great to have you on.
So with the Perrys is going on tour.
Straight is.
Don't know if you knew that already.
Yeah.
I think we're doing 14 cities.
Oh, yeah. You wanted me to say something. We're doing 14 cities.
And he's going to talk about apologetics.
And what you going to talk about?
I'm going to preach some Bible. And then we're going to have a live conversation with the saints about something that you pick. We're going to give y'all the opportunity to pick the conversation that we actually end up having.
And it's going to be God glorifying. It's going to be uplifting to the body of Christ. But mm-hmm. We're going to have fun.
I think so.
We're going to have a lot of fun. A lot of y'all have been trying to get the Bold Apparel merch, and I'm bringing all the merch on tour.
Oh,
like,
yay.
Like all of it.
Beautiful.
And,
you know,
and we're also coming on tour with our books, with my new book, all of Jackie 1900 books.
It's only four.
It's a lot. Man, be on the lookout, man.
All right. So show notes, www.withtheperrys.com/tour. Who are you, Preston Sprinkle? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Who am I? I'm a resident of Boise, Idaho, 46 years old, married to my wife, coming up on 21 years. We have four kids together, four teenagers, actually, 13 to 19. Three girls and a boy. I've been, my ministry career started as I just love theology and academics. So I went and did a bunch of theological degrees and would have kept going, but my wife said I needed to get a job. So I got a job teaching the Bible at a Christian college, did that for a number of years, a few different Christian colleges. And then for the last several years, I've been running a nonprofit called the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender, where we help primarily, well, church, but just Christian leaders as a whole to engage questions of faith, sexuality, and gender with theological faithfulness and courageous love. So that's been my day job and my night job for the last about 4 or 5 years.
So the interesting thing is that you are what, you know, someone would call a cisgendered man, right?
Yeah.
You're straight, you're white, you're married to a woman. As far as we know, you've never been gay.
Wait, like, what is it called?
Cisgendered.
Wow, I did not know that. I didn't know it was a term for that. That's just regular to me.
That's a term that's been placed upon me, not one that I would choose for myself. I don't mind.
What would you say? What would you call yourself?
I'm just a human first. I'm a male second. I'm in Christ, obviously. So,
So what I'm, the thing is though, I think a lot of times, like whether it's me or Christopher Yuan or whoever, like we get into the sexuality conversation because it's a life we've lived. Right. And when it comes to like homosexuality and lesbianism and all the things, why is this a topic that intrigues you?
Yeah, you know, it started kind of going back to what I said earlier about my journey. It started just as an academic curiosity, really. I like to, since I've been a Christian, I've wanted to know, what does the Bible actually say? I know what I've heard it's supposed to mean, what I'm supposed to believe, but I want to know it for myself. So over the years, I've taken all the kind of, not all, but many of the big topics and said, okay, I know what I've been told to believe, but I want to know, what does the Bible actually say? So several years ago, the question of homosexuality came up in my life, just as a, you know, students were asking me about it. I kind of saw the buzz around the Christian culture. So I said, all right, I want to figure this out for myself. So that took me on a academic journey, reading a bunch of books, working through passages, but then also getting in the lives of LGBT people. And I was pretty stunned to find out that most LGBT identified people that I was meeting were raised in the church, and almost all of them had a really bad experience in the church, and largely for relational reasons that theologically conservative Christians could change. Like, it wasn't, I mean, some of them were like, yeah, I just, you know, it was a wonderful, loving environment. I just couldn't take the theology of marriage or whatever. I don't know if I ever heard anybody say those words like that. Usually it was like, I was just, the relational environment was just toxic or dehumanizing. So that's taken me on a journey to want to maintain theological faithfulness. And I'm primarily a theologian. I love to wrestle with those arguments. And that's a part of what I do. But then another part is trying to help the Christian church develop a culture around this topic that reflects more of the holistic vision of who Jesus is. So yeah, it's been interesting.
So Preston's latest book, Embodied, subtitle is Transgender Identities and the Church and What the Bible Has to Say. So you wrote a book about the T in LGBTQ. What does it mean? What is trans?
You ask 10 different people and you'll get 11 answers. So trans, okay, well, trans is an umbrella term used to describe, on the most basic level, somebody who experiences some level of incongruence, disconnect, dissatisfaction with their biological sex. I would say maybe 10 years ago. Well, where do I start? It used to kind of mean like trans was an identity that people who suffered from moderate to severe gender dysphoria would use this term to describe this disconnect. Gender dysphoria would be the distress that some people feel. It's hard to even explain, but this distress they might feel over their biological sex. That used to be, so trans used to almost be like an identity that was almost correlated with gender dysphoria, but now it's become so flexible and nebulous that it could mean a number of things. In fact, there's a whole movement, and not a formal movement, but there's some outspoken, typically younger people who refuse to say you need gender dysphoria to be trans. Like, it's kind of the self ID perspective. Like, if I tell you I'm trans and I'm trans, I don't need some white doctor in a medical coat diagnosing me and telling me who I am. I will tell you who I am. So there's kind of a resistance to the medicalization of the identity. And then there's other people that trans, at the end of the day, might even mean like, I don't resonate with masculine or feminine stereotypes, you know. For other trans people, it might be like, I was born in the wrong body. Even though I'm biologically male, I am a woman. That's like a really strong sense of trans. But, and I can keep going on and on. There's just a range of different meanings to it. But the most basic meaning is some kind of lack of resonance or disconnect with your biological sex. Even then, there might be
that kind of sparked a question in my head from what you just said. Like, I want to be more familiar with the LGBTQ plus community, but I'm not as familiar.
Plus. I see you.
Yeah, you know, I studied before this podcast. Now here. Don't sleep on me.
I see you.
I don't want to speak out of I don't want to speak out of ignorance, and I'm glad you're here so I can ask you. why does it seem like things in this particular community changes a lot? Like, is it that they're trying to work out some things, or is things haven't changed? They just, you know, we're just starting to be more educated on them. Because every time I look up, it seems like there's a new term, or like why is that?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, man. I think a lot of things in culture are rapidly changing and moving, and maybe some of this started with the just rise of social media and smartphones and just the constant flood of information. I think that might play one part. I don't think that the proliferation of all the different identities and terms would have happened without the internet. I don't think it wouldn't have spread that fast. It wouldn't seem like you said, it just seems like every time I wake up, there's a new kind of maybe identity or term. I'm pretty confident that would not have happened without the internet. Also, like when you move from like LGB to the T, you know, T, now we're dealing with one's sense of self. Mm-hmm. And just that concept opens up all kinds of possible categories that surround maybe, you know, what we would have called maybe 10, 20 years ago, just like your personality, like whether you're emo or a hick or a jock or whatever. And you kind of have these interests in life that you just have interests in life. You know, maybe you're more tomboyish, maybe you're not, maybe you're, but now there are identity markers kind of used to capture and categorize what we used to call in some ways just almost like personality in interests. That might play a role too, and we can question whether that's good or bad or neutral, you know. Let's just throw out some of these identity markers. Non-binary, gender fluid, gender queer, trans. If you were to really ask somebody, like, hey, okay, I want you to explain what you mean by this, you're going to get an excellent explanation that might be very similar to how somebody would have explained themselves 20 years ago without the term.
That's very interesting.
But now, where did that come from? I mean, yeah, I don't know if I could even trace that back. There's stuff going on in academic circles and what gender theory and queer theory. There's some academic disciplines that most people have never even heard of. They've kind of, for whatever reason, kind of trickled down into more a popular level conversation. Sometimes I'll hear young people using terms that I'm like, well, I know what the academic means by that. I don't even know if you know what that term means, or the kind of the roots of that term. Of course, I don't talk to somebody like that, but
because I wonder if it ever changes.
What do you mean?
In the world of social media, because I think if we're honest, we're such complicated and complex people, right? And so I think there's always going to be a people group that's going to rise up and feel like they're not represented based on how they feel at the moment. And so, like, this is not even a critique to the community, but I think this is just how, you know, we're created, you know. We're just complex and nuanced people. And so, like, I feel like it's always going to be some type of new term, you know, when we look up, because, you know, it's always going to be a people group or a person who feels like, man, the way you're phrasing, the way I feel like I'm wired or made is not fully represented, you know.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
There is kind of on that, like especially with younger people, more than ever. I mean, young people always go through this, but I think more than ever, this search for uniqueness, for who am I, how can I be unique or seen, or I want to belong. Like, there's this desire to belong. So sometimes identity markers can be a way of finding belonging, of finding community, of finding uniqueness. Whereas maybe in the past there wasn't as much. I mean, again, teenagers are always on that path, but I mean, now more than ever. I mean, we know about the rates of isolation and anxiety and depression and suicidality, and the pandemic didn't help with that. And so I don't know. I wonder if that might be part of this.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think one thing this has forced out of Christians, and by what I mean by one thing, this is this entire conversation about what it means to be trans or what is trans. And a lot of it is just, what does it mean to be male or female or not? Right. And I feel like even to ask the question of what is a woman and what is a man, is actually, we don't really have good answers, good enough answers.
Some people shockingly can't define what woman or man is.
Right. But I think for a long time, maleness and femaleness has been defined by, oh, girls wear pink,
right,
boys
right.
wear blue, girls are soft, boys are hard. And so then we have these people breaking out of the gender stereotypes, and that is becoming trans, when oftentimes you're just breaking out of a stereotype. You get what I'm saying? And so I think, how do you think that these kinds of, like, I don't know, super unbiblical ways of defining femaleness and maleness has influenced the identity crisis in our culture?
That's a huge, that absolutely makes sense. And I think that is getting to the heart of some of the confusion with this conversation. So somebody said, you know, I'm whatever. So let's just say I'm non-binary or something. And he said, oh, what does that mean? And if they said, well, I don't identify as exclusively male or female. Now, we might hear male and female and think biological sex. Like, well, what do you mean you don't identify? Is that a chosen identity? It's just kind of whether you are or not. But if you ask them, well, what do you mean by male or female? They'll probably describe what we might say masculinity or femininity or maleness, femaleness. Like, well, I don't resonate with, and they might describe male typical, stereotypical behaviors or female typical behaviors. And so that when you get to the heart of it, I'm like, okay, I can see how you can find those categories oppressive. The beautiful thing about the Bible is the Bible does not morally mandate stereotypical femininity or masculinity. You see characters like Jesus
right.
shattering some of these culturally driven gender stereotypes. You know, I point out to people, and this isn't an argument. It's just an observation. It's just true. Like in the first century, you know, in Jewish culture, to be a real manly man was to be married, children, to, you know, probably be kind of misogynistic. Like, you wouldn't value women. In the Roman culture, would be to be promiscuous, to don't turn the other cheek, don't love your enemy, don't wash somebody's feet who's of a lower social status. Like, Jesus broke all of those. You have a single man of marital age who turned the other cheek, who got, you know, beat up, you know, so to speak. he deliberately violated these culturally driven stereotypes. Why? Because they're culturally driven. They're not morally mandated. Now, I don't want to deny biology. Males and females will generally, typically, have different, broadly speaking, maybe typical behaviors, interests, whatever. But they're not absolute, first of all. And second of all, they're never morally mandated in the Bible. So, yeah, I think Christianity has a wide open door to embody, to celebrate sex difference. We don't want to collapse those together. But it also gives us a lot of freedom of what it means to be a godly man, godly woman.
So With the Perrys is going on tour.
Straight is.
Don't know if you knew that already.
Yep.
I think we're doing 14 cities.
Oh, yeah. You wanted me to say something. We're doing 14 cities.
And he's going to talk about apologetics.
And what you going to talk about?
I'm going to preach some Bible. And then we're going to have a live conversation with the saints about something that you pick. We're going to give y'all the opportunity to pick the conversation that we actually end up having.
And it's going to be God glorifying. It's going to be uplifting to the body of Christ. But we're going to have fun.
I think so.
We're going to have a lot of fun. A lot of y'all have been trying to get the Bold Apparel merch, and I'm bringing all the merch on tour.
Oh,
like,
yay.
Like, all of it.
Beautiful.
And,
you
know, and we're also coming on tour with our books, with my new book, all of Jackie, 1900 books.
It's only four.
It's a lot. And so, man, be on the lookout, man.
All right. So show notes, www.withtheperrys.com/tour. This is why that just blessed me. You want to know why Preston Sprinkle and Preston Perry? Because we talked about this on a podcast during, I think, season two, about how the way, you know, the way I exist in the world was not called feminine enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't like purses, and I didn't like dresses, and I didn't do all the things, right? And so it was always, you're a tomboy. And so that's a part of why I think embracing, like, you know, that hyper masculine thing when I was calling myself a stud was because, one, it felt natural to behave like that, but it also felt like that's what y'all said I was. Y'all been calling me a boy this whole time. And so now when I act like one, now it's strange all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And so I think if someone would have said, like, the kind of woman you are is still a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. And the culture that I grew up in was a super hyper masculinity culture. Where, like, we were always taught to never to cry, never to show emotion. Don't let people think you a punk. And this is what shows your manhood. To take advantage of as many women as you can. You know, be a womanizer. And so when I came to Christ, and I was like, oh, I saw Jesus was tender, was a nurturer. He knew how to feel. He had empathy. And he didn't look at his culture to define his manhood, but his manhood was defined who he was and who God, you know, who God was. And so I think, yeah, that was just important for me to understand, even growing up and when I came to Christ. So, yeah.
I think because this is such a common discussion, and yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is I was thinking about how Theology in Raw, you had that panel, and I don't remember her name. I think it started with a K, and she shared her story about how she transitioned into a male or whatever.
Yeah.
And not a male, into a man, and how she got connected to a church and they kind of discipled her, and she lived in somebody's basement or something like that. She was taken care of. It wasn't like she was like a suffering
servant.
Whole
story.
Yeah. But anyway, one of the most profound things she said was about how when she was meeting with the couple that was walking with her, how they didn't impose like another thing for her to do. They didn't say, okay, now that you come to Jesus, start wearing some dresses.
Right.
They just kind of walked with her to the point where the Holy Spirit kind of like took her along, where it's like embracing certain stuff. I don't know. So my question is, when it comes to discipleship, because this is a discipleship issue, not just evangelistic, but a discipleship issue where you will have people in your church that are dealing with gender dysphoria. This is a broad question, but how do we walk with them in a way that is, well, I mean, wise and winsome, but also direct?
Yeah, it's good. Kyla is,
there we go,
who are you talking about? And you have just a beautiful, powerful story of, she transitioned 7-8 years ago, then met Jesus a few years ago, and then met a Christian couple who were walking with her in such grace and commitment. They never said, all right, now you need to detransition. They said, hey, we want to love you. We're going to learn from you. We're going to listen. Whatever you need, let us know. And it was the Holy Spirit working in her heart that said, I created you female, and I want you to embrace that identity.
Yeah.
It wasn't forced upon her from a couple. The couple was just embodying the love of Jesus. But they said, all right, if that's where God's leading you, then we want to do whatever we can to help you follow Jesus in that. It's walking with people with gender dysphoria. For people that haven't experienced gender dysphoria, gender dysphoria, to be clinically diagnosed with gender dysphoria, it is a pretty rare psychological condition. Some people don't like the term condition, but I mean, it's in the DSM. So, and the DSM even lists, you know, 0.014% were kind of diagnosed with gender dysphoria in 2013, might be a little more now, but it's still that's pretty low. But I've got several friends who have had, you know, lifelong, sometimes really debilitating gender dysphoria. It's so hard to even describe.
And I have a question.
Yeah.
Do the LGBTQ plus community like that term? Do they do gender dysphoria? Well, is that a term that they?
It's, It depends. There is no, when it comes to this conversation, there it simply is no uniform or even consensus on terminology. Gender dysphoria is pretty accepted. It is the term that's in the DSM. And here's the catch 22. We're getting off a tangent, but it's an interesting one. To get a surgery paid for, right? Your insurance, you have to have a medical condition. So they almost, you don't want to be medicalized. I don't have a problem. I am who I am, but I need a surgery. Well, wait a minute. Why do you need the surgery? Well, I have this condition. So it's kind of a catch 22. Some people may not love the term, but they kind of need some kind of diagnosis if they're going to pursue transitioning. So gender dysphoria is pretty fine. I don't know a lot of people that would, if you call it a psychological condition, that sometimes people might not like that. They might say, I feel distress because society doesn't accept me. Nothing's wrong with me. It's all you who are causing this, you know?
Got it.
What was your original question?
I'm sorry.
Discipleship. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I just think, honestly, just having a lot of humility with the ignorance that we all have with something that's incredibly complex. So I think discipleship needs to be patient, cautious, humble, slow, loving, listening, really walking with somebody. And a lot of, I mean, Kyla said this on stage. I have another friend, Kat, same thing, where they said, when I first came to Jesus, I was working through so much. If someone said, all right, here's the pronouns you need to use. You need to do this. You need to do that. They would have ran so far away. It's the people that met a Christian or Christians or community that were humble and listening and said, you know what? I don't have all the answers, but I'm willing to be with you while we figure this out together. That kind of posture is absolutely huge.
That's a game changer.
And I also, going back to the stereotypes, I think creating a church context where we're not exacerbating or embodying these culturally driven, sometimes oppressive stereotypes. Most trans people I know, as they're following, ones that are like come to Christ, following Jesus, like sometimes they find these stereotypes so exacerbated and baptized almost in the church. And it's just, sometimes it's hard. It's like, I can't even go to church because I just feel like men's and women's retreats and this, that. And, there's just so many things that are just assumed about what it means to be a man and a woman in the church, and it's hard for me to be there. So I think being aware of how we are we overly sanctifying some of these gender stereotypes, or are we giving people, freedom to live out their identity, their male or female identity, in the way that the Bible allows. So,
and I think some context for our listeners, or even Preston, because you probably like, so how does that exacerbate it? Like, what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
I think one might be if, there's a men's meeting at the church and it's about oh, we're going to play football. Right. And so the assumption is that all the men must come together, and the way we come together and bond is through sports, as if all men like sports. Or if you have a women's retreat and it's like, okay, girls, we all gonna get together and, I don't know, knit something and talk about brunch and wear pink, with flowers and things. And you got a large group of women that don't feel like that's a space they actually belong to. They might actually want to go to the men's retreat and play sports. You know what I'm saying? And so I think having a diversity of even like personality types represented, and when you do separate genders in your church.
Yeah, yeah. In the topic of discipleship, I think in the past, even when I co-led a church in Chicago, you had those guys who hated sports, but they didn't have, they didn't struggle with their sexuality per se, but they just didn't like sports, And so for me, I think my question would be in the topic of discipleship is, how can me as a heterosexual male, is it possible for me to disciple someone who is same-sex attracted, a male? Mm-hmm. And if so, like, what does that look like? I mean, because I a little over 2 years ago, I gave the gospel to a guy who was in the human rights campaign. He was out there on the streets, you know, saying, wow, you know, the LGBTQ plus community deserve like equal rights and all this. Mm-hmm. And we talked, and one of the things I talked about, I talked mainly about, you know, him being a Buddhist and, you know, why I feel like Jesus is better than the religion that he serves. But when we begin to text, I have to be honest, I was just like I was uncomfortable in some ways. And I think my uncomfortability was me not wanting to offend him, me not wanting to say something that will be damaging. And so I think for a man, like in this small group, how do we walk carefully with other men, especially in a super hyper masculine culture that says, be a man, and you know, and we even come to Christ with a lot of these toxic thinking. So how can men, you know, walk in love with?
Yeah, man. I don't think there's a one size fits all response to that. Each one's different, has unique stories and needs and everything. I think it would be hard if their context is kind of that hyper masculine. That's gonna be hard for anybody, same sex attracted or not, who doesn't resonate with that. And like you, Preston, you know, I remember growing up and I love animals and I hate to see animals die. But for some reason, I don't know where this came from. Like, that was very unmanly. No, you should enjoy arbitrarily killing an animal. And so I would like sit in my backyard. I remember when I was sick with my BB gun and literally shoot birds to desensitize myself to, and I hated it. This dead bird just sitting there for no reason. Like, I even now thinking about it, I'm like, hated it. But I like, no, to be a real man, you know, is to do that. To not cry. I now tell people, I'm 46. I probably cried maybe 4 times in the last 25 years. You know how unhealthy that is. But even now, I'll watch a movie, and I'll be like, I could feel being moved to tears. And it's almost like there's just something in me that just shuts it down and stops me from crying, because it's been so embedded in me that men don't cry. So
you're preaching, brother.
Yeah, those are, yeah, that's just, there's so much unhealthiness there that, anyway, that's a long response to say, I would want to try to not be in, get out of those environments where, where that hyper, again, culturally driven masculinity is just seen as like the right way to be. And I'm not against, like, in many other ways, I would resonate with stereotypical masculinity. I love to eat meat every meal. I'm not a big talker. I'm not super emotional in other ways, and whatever stereotype you want. Like, I love sports. And if somebody's naturally wired that way, great, whatever, but just don't make it the moral standard for everybody else, and create environments that do honor and celebrate the beautiful human diversity that God's created us to be. And that's when we create an environment that only caters to kind of one kind of person, that can be hard. You know, this is a complex area. How can straight Christians walk with a same sex attracted person of the same sex? Part of me is almost like, just do it like you would any other person. Like, sometimes making too much of sexuality is just not helpful. Sometimes just treating somebody just like a regular person, like you would anybody else, and not overthinking the sexuality piece, unless they're really wanting to work through those questions. I found that to be helpful.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. Good answer.
Now, Preston Sprinkle, here's another one. Polyamory. Okay.
Polyamory.
Oh, what?
I'm not into it. Hard enough being a husband of one wife.
I'm really proud of you. Okay. For those who have never heard the term, how would you describe it?
Yeah.
2, what does the Bible say about it? 3.
Yeah,
we'll take it from there.
Yep. Polyamory, poly, many, is it amora or something? Love. So plural love, many love. So basically a consensual, romantic and or sexual relationship with more than, among more than 2 people, 3, typically it's 3. Sometimes it could be more, a lot more common than people realize. Some people think, oh gosh, some fringe thing. I've led several surveys that upward to 5%, maybe even 10% of Americans at least have been in what they call a consensual non-monogamous or polyamorous relationship. And that's only
really
Yeah, I was tripping.
I brought it up because I was listening to a podcast conversation you had maybe 3 years ago on the subject, where a pastor, I might be mixing up stuff, but I listened to a podcast and I saw a tweet where somebody was using the Trinity as reason for polyamory to be morally acceptable.
Say it ain't so.
And they were saying that because God is one God that exists in three persons, therefore there's like a diversity of love among the members of the Trinity.
You're making
and
this
that
up.
Means that we could be in love with more than one person sexually and intimately, and that's all right. And so I think as Christians, I think we need to be on, we need to prepare ourselves for the fact that this is like
you just
be
can't
a thing.
Say something like that and not pause. Like it's normal. They said that for real.
Yeah.
That's kind of blasphemous.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow.
But you know?
That's well, Romans and here's the thing. Here's the thing. This shocks people. Do we have any examples of a same-sex relationship, same-sex sexual relationship in the Bible where we can say, wow, but here's something where it kind of existed? The answer is no. There's nothing.
Right.
The David and Jonathan thing, that doesn't work. And
Naomi just close.
And Ruth. And there's some people that have in the past tried to find some, but it's just
besties.
Not there. Is there an example of plural marriages in the Bible? The answer is yes. We do have.
All over
and
the place.
Polygamy is different. But it's still under the broader umbrella of more than one person. I mean, it's obviously very patriarchal. It's there's political and economic reasons for it. But so we do have at least we have, I think, more biblical. It's going to sound like I'm arguing for it. I'm not. But I'm saying there is more. We do. There's more biblical evidence for something akin to polyamory than there is for same-sex relationships. Now, yeah, I mean, there's some clear passages that would rule it out. I mean, just go all the way back to the creation narrative where you do have, just because there's two biological sexes and because I do believe sex difference is an intrinsic part of what marriage is, that's part of the logic for why a sexual relationship should be between two people, not three. And because I do think that procreation is... I'm going to tip my hat to my Catholic brothers and sisters here. I think marriage and procreation is one intended purpose of marriage, I think is more closely linked. And once you throw in multiple partners there, I think that really throws a wrench into that. And one more thing, in Matthew 19, Jesus, when they were asking him about divorce, which isn't polyamory, but it's kind of like, you know, a woman who's been divorced and remarried, and whose husband will she be in the new creation? Well, actually, that's a different context. But when he was being asked about divorce, he went back to the creation account and specified male and female, and that duality, not just the sex difference, male and female, but the duality of these two people, God has joined together, let no man separate. So there's
teach the text.
There's an intrinsic duality that's essential for marriage, too. So, I don't think it's going to be, I don't think it's hard to make a biblical case for monogamy, but I will challenge pastors and leaders. Like, this is not some fringe thing. This is something that, especially in more progressive environments, more and more youth groups are dealing with it. More and more churches are saying, I'm having polyamorous thruples, you know, showing up at church. Some that are like, they read their Bible every day. Like they have a Christian posture, I guess, or you know, I think we do need to have a thoughtful, winsome, gracious response to where we're at on this.
I have a question. Pronoun hospitality.
Oh, yeah. Good one.
What is it?
I taught Preston that.
Yeah.
Preston Perry.
What is it? And how should Christians in the body of Christ deal with it?
All right. Let me, I'll try to be concise, but don't interpret my concision for the fact or for assuming this is a simple question. So the question is, if a trans person, or let's just say any person, wants you to refer to them by pronouns that don't match their biological sex, whatever those may be, could be, he, she, or they, them, or even maybe there's some made up ones or new, the neo new terms like Gigergam, or there's a whole bunch of different ones, but no, well, I mean, there's so many. There's some popular ones like what's the one I'm thinking of? There's one that's like really popular, but then there's been so many, I mean, endless, basically, just sounds that aren't real words that people can make up. But I'll start by saying I think it's a complex question. I think there's really good, smart Christians on both sides of this debate. I think the argument that using someone's pronouns that don't match their biological sex, some people say that's lying to them. They are, say, a man, so call them he, him. If you don't call them that, you're just kind of, and I've heard people say it, and I think this is, I don't like this phrase, but you're feeding their delusion. Now, I don't like to use the term delusion in this conversation, but those are the arguments against using someone's pronouns, and there's more to it than that. But the other side says, we don't need to agree with the term. We can use it as a form of hospitality, of meeting someone where they're at. I've wrestled with this a lot, and I have landed generally on the pronoun hospitality side, meaning if I meet somebody on the streets, neighborhood, workplace, whatever, if some God brings somebody in my life and they prefer certain pronouns, I'm going to use those pronouns, not because I agree that they should be using them, but that my desire for relationship supersedes whether I agree with them on this point or not. I tell people, language is shared social space. So we're on video here. So if you have two people and say, I'm over here and I'm person A, this is person B, and I believe that pronouns match biological sex, but what if I meet person B over here and they think pronouns should match one's gender identity, one's internal sense of who they are? So they might have a gender identity that doesn't match their biological sex. And I'm over here thinking, I don't think I agree with anything you just said, maybe. And they're like, well, I don't agree with you. And I don't, it's like, well, language exists in this shared relational space. So I can't really expect everybody I encounter to use to have the same worldview whose language reflects that worldview, and that worldview must match my worldview. Like, at some point, we have to kind of give in. There's a give and take here with language as this, bridge to relationship. So that's primarily why I would land on, using someone's pronouns that they want me to use to at least try. I mess up, I can't. They, them is really difficult. I mean, it's counterintuitive for somebody who's been, who's lived, 46 years of my life using that for plural, not a singular. The one exception that I would want to leave open is parents with like younger kids who want to be called by a different pronoun. With younger kids, let's just say under 18, especially like under 15, there is, I don't, the every term I use here is going to be possibly problematic. There can be a social trendy factor here. So, like, I have friends who, when they hear the pronoun that matches their biological sex, it sends their dysphoria through the roof and they're driven to self-harm. I'm like, wow, well, that, I don't understand why that is. I'm not a psychologist, but man, okay, I don't want to do that to you, And they would even say, I don't know why this is. There's got to be some unhealthiness here that I need to work through. But in the meantime, can you not do things that make me want to go cut myself, When my daughter, my 14-year-old daughter, goes to theater class and she's the only one in a group of 20 that doesn't call themselves they, them, or she, he, they, I'm like, I don't think every single one is dealing with debilitating gender dysphoria when they hear the pronouns. So if my kid, younger kid, wanted to be called by a different pronoun, I think I do have the right and role to parent my kid, unless it, I do see that, man, this is a severe situation. If I use their pronouns, they're going to be suicidal or something. Then I'm like, okay, maybe in the meantime, while I get help, like, maybe I can put a bandaid in the situation and call them whatever they want to be called by, knowing that there's got to be deeper issues at going on here. So, and one more thing, and I know it's a long answer, but So pronouns are a form of social transitioning. So you have social transitioning, hormonal transitioning, taking cross-sex hormones, and then surgical transitioning. And the data does seem to show that when younger kids are affirmed in social transitioning, especially by an authoritative figure like a parent, that can often lead to hormonal and then maybe surgical transitioning. And that's where I'm going to say, if I was a Bible-hating atheist, I would still be adamantly opposed to teenagers transitioning. Not just on ethical grounds, but on just practical, medical, scientific, relational grounds. And you know who agrees with me on that? Every single older trans person I talk to. So this isn't my cis, hetero, whatever opinion coming out. This is just kind of basic medical care. But all that to say, parents of younger kids, I want to, if you're doing something that's going to encourage that path of social, hormonal, surgical with a younger kid, I'm going to say, yeah, let's not do that. You know, if your kid's 25 and they make that decision, it's kind of out of your hands. But younger kids, I really want to help them navigate the complex society that they're living in. But sorry, does that make sense? We'll never hear your thoughts on that.
I mean, it makes sense and it gives me a lot of clarification. But also the they/them thing, I never really understood it.
Yeah,
and I know we're running out of time, so we could just do this real quick. And this could be a question for both of you guys: is that someone who doesn't identify with male or female?
So it typically somebody who identifies as non-binary, so they don't identify as either male or female. Again, what they mean by that typically is masculinity or femininity. They don't prefer either he or she pronouns because those are binary terms, one or the other. They, them is kind of a neutral. It's a non-gendered, if you will, pronoun. I think there's two categories of people here. For some typically younger people, I think, again, there is a social trendy influence here, role here. I do have some older friends who prefer they, them. And again, one of my friends in particular says, I know I'm biologically female, and I think it would dishonor God for me to prefer he, him, even though that would be in my flesh. Like that's what I would prefer, but I don't think that's right for me in my relationship with God. When I hear she, her, which matches my biological sex, it drives me to self-harm, exacerbates my dysphoria. So they, them is a mediating position to try to honor God by not saying he, him, but to not also be driven to self-harm. So that's different than the 12-year-old who came back home from junior high and said, I'm they, them now, and not really knowing, you know, all my friends are they, them. I want to belong and, you know.
Well, thank you, Preston Sprinkle.
Yeah.
This was very helpful. I want everybody to go buy your book, Embodied. I want everybody to subscribe to Theology in Raw. You even got Patreon, you know, where you be answering people's questions about dinosaurs and hell and stuff like that.
You're a pretty cool guy, Preston.
So we appreciate you, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, all you right. Too. It's got to be the name.
You have a good one.
30 Minutes with the Perrys is a production of Ivy Media Podcast. Edited by Angie Elkins. Video recording and audio production by Kim Powell. Artwork by Hop and music by Swoop. Join us on Patreon for early access to With the Perrys episodes and other exclusives. You got two options. You can go to www.patreon.com/withtheperrys or just go ahead, scroll. You'll find the link in our show notes. We are the Perrys. Thank y'all for listening. Now go with God.